This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Wow. What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Back here on WEEI, I'm John Lyons, alongside Dan Ball. Our producer, Tom Crisafulli, didn't want to play when Tatum and Brown missed four straight free throws in the third quarter of that Lakers-Celtics game. We are going to spend the next hour pretty much talking Celtics, and I can't wait. And to help us do that, we are joined by the one and only second-best JT in Boston, Justin Turpin. Justin, what's up?
What's up, guys?
Hey,
thanks for having me on.
So can we start with the loaded question of what's wrong with the Celtics? No, let's step. So look, the Celtics are out on this road trip. They blow out Golden State, beat them by 40, the largest home loss in the Steve Kerr era. Zingy looks fantastic in this game. The Celtics they look really good. They go to the Clippers, a game they should have won in regulation. Jaylen Brown has that bad turnover. They ultimately win it in overtime, but you don't feel great because it's a severely undermanned Clippers team. And I know Porzingis and Horford didn't play in that game, but still, you barely win against a severely undermanned Clippers team. Then you go to LA, you're full strength. Porzingis has had the night off the night before, and then you don't only lose, you lose by 21. Holiday and White have a combined 6 points. The Lakers out rebound you by 11, including plus seven. In the first quarter, I mentioned Tatum and Brown. You cut the game to a 12-point deficit. They missed four free throws in a row. Celtics 10 of 26 in the restricted area. I could sit here and go on, Terp.
Oh, yeah.
But I ask, I mean, you look at this road trip. They're 2-1. I get it. But why are they 12-10 in their last 22?
From the Memphis game,
there's a lot of scuffling going on with the Boston Celtics, a team that I think you and I and Dan could agree, the most talented team in the NBA. Defending champs, as we know, why is it so much different than this time a year ago?
It's just the inconsistency. And people keep pointing to the fact that they're the reigning champion and they're going to go through stretches like this. But the reality is like you said, they're, 12-10 in their last 22 after starting the season 19-4. The sample size of them being a 500 basketball team is equivalent to what we saw them being a dominant basketball team. So it's been the inconsistencies. Offensively, it's been their spacing. Defensively, they're just not bringing it intensity-wise every night. And it's to be expected. Again, right, they're the reigning champions and they're skipping steps. But the problem is, when you start to build these bad habits, you can't just expect to flip a switch in the postseason. Like, that's a very dangerous gamble to play, and I mean, I don't like it, so they need to eventually turn this around.
I'm going to preface this question by saying that almost daily, I rip you off directly on Twitter for my trending reports during the afternoon, so I appreciate all the great work that you do, but one of the things that you've highlighted multiple times, either on Twitter or on the website, are the net ratings in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
So is there anything specific to the inconsistencies that kind of manifest themselves in the fourth quarter with this group?
The fourth quarters have just been head-scratching. I mean, we were just talking about it during the break. What we saw against Atlanta in the fourth quarter there with Jrue Holiday committing the take foul, turning the ball over.
Unreal.
Like, this is Jrue Holiday. Like, this guy has built a reputation of being one of the most consistent, just makes the right play type of guy. And he's doing that down the stretch of a fourth quarter against the Hawks. And then you look against the Clippers, like Jaylen Brown turning around just getting trapped in the corner and throwing the ball away. It's like, where is this coming from? Like, how do they just forget how to play basketball down the stretch? It's, we've had so many of these games where just like, what were they doing down the stretch there? Because they've shown at the highest level that they can all execute and find a way to win. That's what they prided themselves on last year. But now it's kind of like they try to get away with doing less. It's like, what can we not do and still win? Like,
Orlando game, December 23rd. Like, you had a 15-point halftime lead. And Everything you're talking about, it was like in the second half, it's like, let's just see if we can do the bare minimum and win. And then you lost.
Yeah, and you mentioned that Orlando game because I think the OKC game was very similar to that. Two very physical teams that play excellent defense. First half, the Celtics had a 10-point lead in both of those. It's just they didn't match the physicality for an entire 48 minutes. And last year, even this year, like Joe Mazzulla wears the sweatshirt that says mindset. It was like their version of Mbutu. Like that was their rallying cry. And they just haven't prided themselves on that this year. And again, it's to be expected they're the reigning champion. So it does give them some leeway. But eventually that's going to run out, right? And you have to actually show that you are this dominant team. Over those last 22 games, they'd be sixth in the Eastern Conference. That's not where this team should be.
And you, like we talked about it, and Dan, you mentioned like the net rating stuff. Like last year, their historically good net rating, right? 11.7. If you look at them this year on the surface, they're third in offensive rating, fifth in defensive rating, third in net rating. But in their last 10 games, I mean, their net rating is 15th.
Yeah.
Their offensive rating, 20th. Now, their defensive rating is actually still fifth. But, I mean, am I oversimplifying it if I'm like, I'm watching that Lakers game the other night and Drew has an early three that goes in and out. Jalen has one that goes in and out. These dudes are just missing a bunch of shots. Porzingis, I think, even had a layup that went in and out. Like, is it just like, hey, some of these are going in and out, or is this, and to use your word from last year's playoffs, are they not as connected on the offensive end as maybe we're used to or we should expect?
Well, I think part of it is that they're all collectively in a slump. I've never seen a team of just these great shooters go so cold for a 7-week stretch. It's insane. Like, look at Derek White. It's no coincidence, too, that he's having his worst stretch as a Celtic, and the Celtics are .500.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no coincidence
Fair.
With that.
Yeah.
They go as Derek goes. Like, he's a good kind of barometer of where they're at. But how does the team across the board is shooting? It's so bizarre. And now it's forcing them to play a little bit differently offensively. Like, their three-point attempts are down 6 per game. That's a confidence thing. They're not really sure that they can still shoot at the level they are because they're not making them. So they're driving too much now. And sometimes those driving kicks that they were making aren't really happening because they're not really trusting guys to make the shot. So they're sticking with their offense, and they should, because it won them 64 games last year, obviously got them off to a 19-4 start this year. But at some point, like, there has to be a change. Like, these have to start going in, and it will. Like, the law of averages are going to even out, and we keep saying that. And you just look at all these talented players. Like you said, John, this is by far the most talented team in the NBA. Eventually, they're going to start making their shots again. It's just a matter of when and weathering it until then.
It's such an interesting point that you make of they go as Derek White goes.
Yeah.
With the way that all the money is spread out, you kind of would look at it and go, well, they should go as Tatum and Brown would go, just looking at it from how you've invested in these guys. So this is more of just like a general roster construction question. Who is the leader of the Celtics? And I guess the follow-up would be, do they have the kind of leadership that can kick them in the ass in a situation like this and kind of help them right the ship?
I don't think they need that because of how confident they are.
Okay.
I think they really are just confident in how good they are. And I think if there is somebody that needs to be something that needs to be said, I think anyone in that locker room is capable of using their voice and doing it. Like, obviously, the answer would be there's a 1A. Like, in terms of leadership, I think that's Jalen. I think Jalen's the more vocal leader. He's the guy that takes pride in setting the tone. He's not afraid to speak his mind.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Jason's more of the easygoing, we're going to work this out. Everyone compares him to Tim Duncan, right? Lead by example. Whereas Jalen will go out and say it. And I'm sure Joe will, too. He will never say it in front of the media. He will bend and twist and do everything he can to not call his team out in front of the media.
It's interesting.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean these conversations aren't being had behind closed doors, because they most certainly are. And because Joe, all he cares about is winning, clearly. Like, he is not afraid to do whatever it takes to try to find ways to win. Look at going to Jaden Springer the other night. And I know it took a little bit to get there, but going to that and, like, closing with Jaden Springer when you have all these elite talent, like, he wants to win. And he's not afraid to call them out, but it's all going to happen behind closed doors.
So you mentioned, like, the Jaylen Brown thing, and I'm not as, like, worried about it as maybe some other folks are, but I do find the role interesting because I thought, and Doris Burke, actually, credit to her, she talked about this last year, but I think the Celtics are at their best when Jaylen Brown is the guy in the first quarter who sets the tone, and then Jason Tatum kind of lets the game come to him, works into a rhythm, and by the end of the game, usually Tatum will have the higher numbers, not 100% of the time, but usually, and I think that's been such a good balance for them for so many years, and especially last year, where you would come out, and not that Tatum wouldn't be good early, but it was like Jaylen Brown was shot out of a cannon in the first quarter of some of those playoff games and even regular season games last year, and then Tatum, second quarter, third quarter, putting up big numbers. They both kind of come together in the fourth, make big plays. It feels like they're starting to go back to that a little
bit. Last three games they have.
Right. And I don't know, maybe it was just an off night with the Lakers thing, but I feel like, I mean, do you have any answer? First, why did they go away from that, I guess would be my initial question.
Yeah, Joe said it was just to give them a different look, to keep teams on their toes. Obviously, they're retaining the exact same roster. You have the same rotation, guys.
Do you think they regret that at all?
No, not at all.
I don't either, but I mean, it's just, I guess if there's one thing they did that most teams don't do is they literally brought everyone back.
How the continuity was supposed to be like the big strength, and now everyone's using it as their weakness.
Like, it will be in June.
Everyone's here, and it's like, we're still working it out, which I get it. Like, that's part of the shooting thing, too, is the rhythm. It's like, God, if you look at it, like Jaylen shooting a career low from the field and from three, been in another lineup with injuries. Kristaps for a while. Now he's really picking up, especially in the last like 10 games, but it took him a while to get going. Jrue Holiday shooting near career lows in and out of the lineup. Like, it's the guys that haven't been in there that have been struggling. So that is part of it. But to answer the question about like the sub patterns, like, it was weird that they did it, and it was obvious that Jaylen didn't like it. Like, he really is a prideful individual, and we were just talking about it. He's very outspoken, and he's going to say what's on his mind. And he didn't like that. I think that's his kind of role. Like, he takes pride in that. He wants to be the guy to set the tone defensively and in the first quarter, because he knows eventually he's going to have to give it over to Jason. So,
and we are talking about the Finals MVP,
right?
And the Eastern Conference. It's not like we're talking about Joe Schmo,
right?
Like, the Finals MVP.
He's earned that
on a lot of levels. I get it,
right? He's absolutely earned that. Like, I think that is his thing. Like, he wants to be the guy to set the tone. You take that away from it, it's like, all right, now what? Now what do I do?
Yeah, I'm glad they've gone back to it in the last three games.
It's been better.
I agree, and I assume they'll continue it going into the game against Dallas today. We're going to get into that and much more. Justin, you okay to stick around with us for another segment?
Of course I am.
We haven't scared him away, Dan Ball.
Just drive in for one segment.
That's true.
You know?
That's true.
I was on 93 today. I know exactly how ugly it was.
Yeah, that's it.
Is there any time of day where I'm not going to get stuck in traffic on that damn highway, by the way?
I would come home from the night show at like 11 p.m., and I'd get in traffic on 90.
They got all those detours, fixing the bridges.
I remember when they won the championship, KJ and I were live here on radio until 5 a.m. the following morning. And I drove home on 93 South at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
And still got in a little bit of traffic. I was like, come on, guys, come on. But anyways, we're going to get into much more Celtics talk with our good friend Justin Turpin coming up next. But first, it is time to trend with Tom.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW, because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour, the boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed.
Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Chris Foley back here on WEEI. John Lyons alongside Dan Ball. We are still joined by the one and only Justin Turpin, covers the Celtics for WEEI.com and the Slammed Pod with him and Megan Ottolini. Does a great job with that. Justin, we were talking about before the break Jaylen Brown's role and the way they adjusted the substitution patterns. And obviously, they've gone back to what worked last year, the past few games, just to piggyback off that. I mean, is this where they're at? They're going to go back to what worked last year and just stick with it? Or do you think, hey, if they don't beat Dallas today, there could be more adjustments? Like, where are they at?
I think rotation-wise, they're going to stick with this, especially because Jaylen was so outspoken about how he was not happy with the role that he was in. And again, we just talked about it. He's earned that right to use his voice as the Eastern Conference and NBA Finals MVP to say, listen, like, I don't feel like I'm being put in the position to succeed. And I also think Jaylen looks at it as like shooting career lows from the field and from three. And I think part of that went into is like, I'm not getting the chance to succeed the best I can because you guys changed my role again. Because remember last year when they mixed up with his role a little bit when they brought in Porzingis and Holiday, it took him a while to kind of adjust to it. And then this year he was the one that had a change again. So I think he was a little bit frustrated and think that played into how he's been playing this year. And he's been great. He's going to be an all-star, but I think he'd be the first to admit like this isn't up to his standard.
How much have injuries played a role into the fact that it has just seemed a bit more disjointed than a year ago?
I think Kristaps is the biggest one.
Okay.
Like, if you look at the last couple weeks, and now he's really starting to find himself, they're just trying to force feed him to get him going.
Yeah.
And Kristaps always took accountability for that after the game. He'd be like, it's my fault. Like, I'm trying to get reacclimated. My teammates are looking for me. But now as he's getting ready to go, like the last 10 games, he's probably shooting near 50%. I don't have the numbers in front of me. But the way he's playing now, like, they don't need to do that anymore. It's all going to come in the flow of the game. And he called it after the Denver game, and obviously it hasn't come to fruition yet, that they're going to go on a run. And I really do think that's going to happen the more they log minutes together. Like, they're probably nearing, like, 200 minutes together this year as a starter.
Yeah, they were at, like, 85 for the longest time. I think they're in the 180s now. Ish, I'd have to double-check.
So after tonight, they'll probably be north of 200. It is small. That's really small. And obviously, they didn't play a ton in the postseason last year either.
Right.
So you're talking how many months?
Yeah. Well, but in the postseason, like, you're right. Like, they didn't have Porzingis for most of it, but they had the other four.
Right.
Pretty, like, we've still seen nights now where there's no Holiday, there's no Brown. Right.
But
like,
I think KP's the biggest in that.
Yeah.
Especially because he just changes the way they play. Like, the spacing's completely different. You have that post option that, and there's other players that can post. Like, Jaylen's tremendous in the post this year. Drew can post as well, but nobody does it as well as Kristaps. It's one of your favorite stats, John. The points per possession with him in the post.
He was number one in the NBA among qualifiers last year.
In pretty much like every category. Yeah. Score
for the year before, he was fourth with the Wizards.
It's insane. Yeah. Like, it's just, that's a cheat code. And then they are a bad basketball team. But you look at it, like, just the way they play with Kristaps is completely different. So I think that plays into it.
Because you just can't create what he brings in the aggregate, so to speak.
No.
Like, you have guys that can play the post, you have guys that can score, guys that can create space. But Nobody. That's why they, because he's the unicorn,
that's
right?
Like that's literally called the unicorn.
Literally, nobody in the, or certainly not on your roster, that can do all of the things that he brings. It's been so fascinating too. This isn't a question more than just an intrusive thought. To watch how he has embraced and how the team has flourished with him is, I guess you'd consider him the third best option when you have your five starters on the floor. You have your Tatum and Brown, your 1A, 1B, and then him being in a position in with the Knicks when he was drafted where he isn't the super-duper superstar they needed. Washington was kind of a one-off. Fit in a little bit better in Dallas as the two to Luka Doncic, but him being the third option with those two stars and how well that's clicked for him in his own career has been pretty cool to watch.
And that kind of just made something pop in my head too, as you mentioned how he's the third star. If you look at what they've been doing over this 22 game stretch, they're not getting the compliments from the others, like the rest of the roster. We already talked about how Derek and Drew have been. Peyton Pritchard, he's another one that, like, he's gone cold since starting the season so hot. And obviously he was going to come
down there.
Sam Hauser,
too. Well, the shooting percentage, his threes, both down from last year.
That's what I'm worried about with Hauser.
Is he hurt?
He is. He's been dealing with the back injury all year, and that's a problem.
Yeah.
Because that's going to linger.
When I feel like, and we saw this in the Golden State game as well earlier, when Sam Hauser hits, like, two or three threes, they're like almost unbeatable. Like, because it's just like if he's hitting threes, teams don't beat the Celtics. But he's had a lot of games this year, Terp, where it's no points, 2 points. He hits 1 3 and it's 5 points. Like, I think he might have had the biggest drop off of any of their top eight players from a year ago.
Him and Derek.
And Derek,
for sure.
Too, yeah.
And another guy, though, been in and out of the lineup. And as a shooter, like, you're in and out, you're not building rhythm. And now he's actually starting to. He's been a lot better in the last couple games. But if that back flares out again and he's out for a little bit of time, like, we're back to square one. And we know what he can do as a shooter, but it's out of his control with this back injury. So that's why I look at it. Like, if you're looking at the deadline, obviously there's not much they can do. But you got to prioritize some sort of score. Like, I'm thinking, do they regret not just cutting the money on Lonnie Walker? They would have been like $14 million with the taxes. I get it. It's easy for me to sit here and say that. I'm not the one cutting the checks, and I'm not the one in the middle of an ownership change. But that's a proven scorer, a guy that you clearly believed in because you brought him in, and you were trying to shop Jaden Springer to try to keep him on the roster. So I do wonder if they're kind of looking back on that like, oh, man, like that would have been quite the insurance to have. But again, just the financials of it do make it complicated.
There's been a pretty impressive internal growth process of the depth, where now you talk about a Hauser and a Pritchard and guys that have cracked the roster and are pretty good in their roles. Have you seen anybody else? I'm sure Springer may be a name that fits the category, but him, I know a guy like Baylor Shireman's who's been called up a couple times, but any next wave of young players that you've kind of started to see flashes from?
Kata comes to mind.
Oh, sure.
Nemesh Kata starts.
Huge layup against the Clippers.
That was huge.
Yeah.
And he's just, you're seeing a lot of improvements from him. And he's still raw, and he's a young player. Didn't play a ton last year, but clearly they believed in him. They converted his contract at the end of the year, then gave him an extension in the offseason. I can see that kind of happening this year with maybe Drew Peterson, who's another guy that we've seen take another step. And the Celtics do a great job, their player development team, the connection with Maine. Like, you can go on and on, like Cornette, Hauser, I mean, Kata's one now. Jordan Walsh is starting to become one.
Yeah,
Drew Peterson. Yeah. A lot of those guys that spend time in Maine come out and prove they can play in the league. The thing is, with Drew Peterson, it's a really small sample size, so I think more Kata and Walsh. Like, Walsh looks good in the minutes that he's been given this year. It's just, I don't know how much Joe trusts him, and that's why I think he's going to the double big a lot more, because there's just not another wing on the roster right now that he trusts in those situations. And I think Jordan Walsh can eventually get there. He's 20 years old. Like, they've got to be patient with him.
Double big. They went to it a lot against the Lakers. Do you think they're going to that well too much? And look, you have Porzingis, you have Horford, you have Cornette, you have Kata. You have some capable bigs, but do you think they're taking away a little bit from some of the athleticism they have, whether it's not just Tatum and Brown, but even the athleticism of a Pritchard, a Hauser? Like, are they taking away from that a little too much and too much double big?
For sure. And last year, what'd they do? They went to O'Shea Brissett in those situations. And O'Shea Brissett was, obviously they lost to Savi Mihailuk and O'Shea Brissett from last year's roster. And it was kind of an afterthought. Like, he didn't really play a big role, but the role he played was very important, and he played it well. When they needed to go to a faster, and they wanted to play smaller, he was there grabbing rebounds. He wasn't going to shoot the ball very well, but he was going to grab rebounds and change the game with his energy. They don't really have a guy like that this year, and I think Jordan Walsh can eventually be there, but he's still developing. I mean, people forget he was a second-round pick, got drafted at 19, didn't really have an opportunity last year to be in the NBA, was spent most of the year in Maine. And then this year, I mean, he's had opportunities, but it's just been so sparingly. So they need like another wing that can help, that can score, and that can change the game with that energy and be athletic. Because if you look across the board, like, the Celtics are far from the most athletic team. Especially
they're really big.
They're huge.
But they're not super athletic. And that was something we saw in the conference finals last year. Remember Cornette played a bunch against Cleveland in the second round? Conference finals, didn't really play that because just the athleticism factor of Indiana was something totally different.
They were going to tell me who's completely fallen out of the rotation.
Yeah, that's
completely fallen
out.
Is
that a thing? Is that like, because I agree, like, Tillman, A, plays against Indiana in the conference finals, hits a huge shot in game three of the NBA finals, barely see him on the court now except garbage. I mean, is that a...
And they re-signed him in the offseason. He took less money to be here, too.
Yeah.
It's weird. I don't know why he's fallen out of the rotation. I really don't have an answer for it, because he's a guy that, like, last year they wanted a big wing type at the deadline. They got that in Xavier Tillman. I think part of it is the 3-point shooting. And if you remember back in the preseason when he was hitting those threes, everyone getting a little giddy. It's like, oh man, this might be the perfect rotation player for the Celtics.
Right.
That could make a difference. It just hasn't kind of turned into that. So I don't really know why he's fallen out of the rotation. I really don't. I mean, when they're fully healthy, I think Joe does trust Cornette more than him. And Cornette's earned that. He's obviously been here. And he's one of the smartest basketball players on the Celtics, Cornette. Like, he's just always in the right spot. And obviously he's not going to light you up with the scoring. Oh, he has a couple times this year. But with his screening, his rebounding, his positioning, like, he does a lot of good things for them that goes really under the radar. So I see why they lean on him a little bit. But there's just so much bigs on the team right now. Like, that's not a concern at all. They have a lot of depth at the big. It's they need a wing that can score.
So you're tapped into Celtics fans either through covering them, through social media, with the podcast, everything. Where are Celtics fans right now? Are the green teamers still everything's going to be fine, the law of averages thing that you mentioned? Is there any kind of panic that you perceive with this year's team?
I get the sense that there's still, like, a level of confidence.
Okay.
In years past, and we did this for decade, like, live and die by every loss. Everything. It was always the end of the world.
Right.
That's just not the case anymore. Like, they've won a championship. There's that monkey off your back. You can kind of sit back a little bit, and you don't have to overanalyze and overreact every game. However, I do think there is now a sense of urgency.
Okay.
Like, we've been doing this for 7 weeks. That's a long time. A 7-week span of 500 basketball for a team that's just not meeting expectations. And Joe brought up a good point a couple weeks ago, how the expectations are relative with what Cleveland's doing and what Oklahoma City is doing. So it's interesting. I think there is a level of confidence, but there is also a sense of urgency that this needs to be righted.
Does the sale have anything to do with that? I mean, final bids or bids, whatever it was, due this week. They've been kind of in a malaise. I know the trade deadline's coming up. I mean, what did we talk about in July? Oh, if they a new buyer, a new owner, he's going to want to trade one or two of these contracts. Even if he wants to win, he might not be able to afford all this. Is there anything regarding the sale that you think is hanging over them, and then once they get to the trade deadline and they're all here, we'll kind of kick it forward and they'll be fine? Or is the sale kind of not a factor with these guys?
I don't think it's a factor
really
at all, because I really don't. I think they know that none of the top nine are going anywhere. They're not going to punt on a championship opportunity here. They're not just going to trade one of their top nine with the sale. And the sale's a big, big deal. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm not underselling at all. But I don't think it's an issue for those guys, because I think there's been conversations that these guys are going to stay.
Like, it's not a 2025 issue,
right?
Is what you're saying.
Especially with the new CBA. It's going to be tough to see a deal like one of those guys with the money they're making get traded at the deadline. It's just not going to happen as much just because of all the new bells and whistles in the CBA. So I don't think it's a thought for them. I mean, they were asked about it on media day, and of course they're going to say the right things. Like, they're really buttoned up and media trained, and they're like, it's just business as usual. They don't really understand what's going on. And I think that's kind of been the message consistently. Like, Joe, I can tell you, definitely isn't concerned about it. It's just business as usual for them. But they do know. I mean, like, it's everyone knows that there's going to be moves come the off season, and we'll cross that bridge when we get there. And hopefully that's after another parade and championships is how they're looking at it.
That'd be nice.
That's what I'm looking at.
Yeah,
too.
That's, right.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah.
On the sale, first and foremost, thank God the report about the Fenway Sports Group was debunked.
You know what, though? Why have we done that twice?
What do you mean?
Like, never. Fenway Sports Group came out when they were first tied to it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Already declined it, like, we're not interested. And then we did the same song and dance again. Like, I get
point.
It. It's a local local ownership.
Dylan. And, no, yeah, I mean, yes. Like, local,
yeah, that works
local
too.
Local ownership.
But I get it's like a local
Sorry,
ownership.
As I work for
like,
the Red Sox radio.
Going, we keep going back to that. It just makes no sense to me. And like,
yeah.
They've been rumored and tied too. And I think they've been more outspoken about the expansion team in Vegas,
yeah.
Which makes so much more sense considering they want to sell the experience of a building, of an arena, and the Celtics don't own their arena.
Huh. Selling the experience of a building without actually putting together a team that's worth attending the building to go see?
Yes.
The
yes.
Fenway Sports Group model.
Yes.
On the Red Sox
Radio
Network.
Do you know anything about the bidders? Is it Bezos? Is it Paliuka? Like, do you know anything?
The only one that's been announced.
Can we clip that last part of the sentence?
Do you know anything?
I know a few things. The only one that's been actually confirmed is Steve Paliuka. And the only reason he has been is because he explicitly said it. All the other stuff is coming. None of the information is coming from the Celtics. I don't know if anyone's caught on to that. Like all the Fenway Sports Group, it's like no spokesperson from the Celtics have come out and said, oh, they're not interested. It's always from the outside. Like the Celtics, and they do a great job with this, keeping everything really close to the vest. Like there's not really much known about the sale, and I don't think they want it to be. I don't think it's a coincidence that some of the prices came out earlier this week because the bidding was this week, trying to drive that price up a little bit. Like that stuff's intentional, but as far as like the bidders themselves, the only one that we actually know is Pags because he came out and said it.
Is there any chance Irv has a change of heart and they don't sell, or is this like they're selling?
I mean, I don't really know how the logistics work. Like this whole process is extremely confusing. But are they in too deep now? I don't see it happening.
Because I feel like Wick doesn't want to sell.
No, he doesn't. But I don't think
can he convince his dad? I feel like he would have by now.
Yeah,
you know, I just didn't know.
I just don't think it can. What if they rebid? Can that happen? I don't know how this really works. Like in that sense, but I just think it's too deep now, and I don't think it's happening.
Interesting. Is there anything attached to an arena that would come that would potentially come out of this?
That was some of the reporting done when it was first announced that if that was to be the case, it'd be a casino magnate that would buy it because they'd be the only one with the funds to afford a $5 to $6 billion franchise and then build the entities needed with the arena.
Right.
So it's also where are you gonna put it?
That's a good point.
if it's already expensive enough to find an apartment. Where are you going to put it?
Yeah,
like, that's the
there
thing.
There was the Everett talk right the near Everett the casino, talk, but even that is
the
like
soccer stadium.
Yeah,
so like, and that would be the casino magnet.
And
like,
they just
the
did
only one that would make
so
sense.
Many updates to the garden.
Right,
like they've redone.
They did
it feels like
the
half
top
the garden.
Nine, the level yeah. nine, that rafters there. Like
they took out the yellow seats. Now they're just black, so it's more neutral.
Right,
so you can almost be convinced that the Celtics play there.
And Charlie Jacobs said it on these airwaves during the Jimmy Fund that they just re-upped that lease. Like
yeah.
they're not going to be able to get out of that lease. So I don't like. That's definitely a factor, and I wouldn't be surprised if that kind of scared off some potential bidders because you're going to be paying rent to Delaware North and the Jacobs family.
So is this something where they have this year, they're going to get hopefully another championship, and then they're going to get sold, and this rotation's not going to be the same next year? I mean, is that kind of – when you look at this, because I know you mentioned Paliuka's acknowledge, like I could see Paliuka trying to keep it all together. I don't know if an outside buyer would look – an outside buyer could look at it and say, hey, we have two Supermax guys. We'll put another high-priced guy with him, and that should be enough to win a championship. We don't need five or six high-priced guys.
Well, just the nature of the contracts itself, like you're going to be paying almost as much in contracts as you are in salary taxes as you are as the contracts themselves. Yeah. Like nobody can justify that. Not even Wick Rosbeck would have justified that. Like there was – it's known that there are going to be changes made this offseason. It's just a matter of who stays and who goes. And I think that would tie into the sale. I think that'd be the closest thing that ties into the sale. But it's just a bridge that they're going to cross in the offseason. And I'm sure the new ownership will sit down with Brad Stevens and Mike Zarin, and those conversations will be had. But it is inevitable. And that's what's kind of tough about the new owner, because they're going to have to come in and move one to two of these players who everyone's kind of loved. And hopefully by then they'll have won two championships. It's like, oh, man, like you're automatically a villain because you had to come in and blow it out. But
right.
It's a tough situation to be in.
Who? All right, let's play the game. I know that there's still a championship to be won. Who goes? Who's the names on the chopping block for you?
I mean, I would kind of gravitate towards Kristaps or Drew. I think those would be the ones I'd look at. But it really, you don't really know. I mean, there's so much that goes into it. There's
like,
going to be
I don't
trade
think it would
options.
Be Jalen or Jason.
No, I don't think so.
All right,
either.
That's what I was kind of wondering.
It is kind of like whatever happens, like who's going to offer what for which players. There's a lot that goes into it. So we'll see what happens with it when that comes. And that's going to make for a lot of offseason content for us here, which is good. But
oh, I mean, love that.
Unfortunate that they're going to have to move some pieces of one of the most historically dominant teams.
Do you think Jalen could be a one on a different team in the league, like versus your kind of 1A, 1B that you have in Boston right now?
A lot of them could be.
Yeah.
Like Jalen could be. Derek could be. Kristaps could be. Like, just looking down the line, and even on some of those lesser teams, like Peyton Pritchard could be.
That's true. That's a good point.
He'd be the Wizards one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. I might be able to.
He'd be the Hornets one.
Like, hey, that Hornets team, they got some talent. Charles Lee trying to build
something
over there.
Shout out to Charles Lee. He's good.
But Brandon Miller back on the injury list, now done for the year. So they've been banged up.
Before we let you go, Terp, they're 31-14. So. And Megan Ottolini, I thought, had a really interesting article on the website about how they stack up versus previous defending champions. The Durant Warriors lost, I think, 7 wins from year one to year two. Those Kobe Lakers teams, they lost wins. The LeBron Heat teams. Is there a line of kind of demarcation for you where last year they win 64 games? If they win 56 this year, are you still okay with it? Or is that too much of a drop-off? Like, is there a line where you're going to sit there and say, ooh, this is too much and I'm worried, as opposed to like, hey, they're just, it's the second year, it's harder to win 64 twice in a row. Is there a line there for you?
The only line I'm looking at is 40-20. The legendary Phil Jackson, you win 40 games before you lose 20 and you're a legit contender. Like, that's the only line I'm looking at. But you mentioned them, how they stack up to past champions. I thought what Steve Kerr and Steph Curry said earlier this week was really telling. Like, when Steve Kerr says that this is completely natural, like, that's somebody you listen to. He's done it with the best players. He went back to back with Curry and did it with Jordan as a player. Like, he's seen the best of the best do it. He's experienced the lows of the lows. So when he says that, like, that piques my interest, and that's something that I listen to and really take that for what it's worth, because it's true. Like, if you look at the past champions that have ended up going back to back, you do have some slippage in there. It's inevitable. So they're eventually going to break out of this. And you mentioned they're 31-14. They're the only team in the NBA top five in offense and defense. So has it really been that bad? And I understand a lot.
So
of
they don't suck. Is what you're saying?
No, they definitely don't suck. I understand a lot of those numbers have been buoyed by the 19-4 start. But I mean, there's no need to panic yet. It's just a matter of, don't let these become your new habits, because the habits they built last year of staying focused, really locking up on defense and sharing the ball, playing basketball the right way, is last year. Now they got to reestablish those, and that's the only thing that I'd be really worried about.
Last question, Terp. Quick preview, Celtics-Mavs today. I know no Luka, no Derek Lively. What should we expect this evening?
I'd expect them to get up coming up after that rough Lakers game. They're 12-1 after a loss this year, and they're blowing teams out. I tweeted the stat out earlier. I don't know it off the top of my head. I think it's over 16.
I'm sure I borrowed it. Let me see if I can find it.
I'm pretty sure it's over 16 points a game after a loss this year, and they're 12-1. So that would imply, too, is even if they're still in this rut, as long as they win game one, they'll win every series, right? If they're 12-1 after a loss.
That's true. There you go. A good way.
Right?
Just win game one, and you're all set.
That's it. That's all they have to do.
One game series. No. All right. Justin Turpin does a terrific job covering the Celtics for WEEI.com. You can follow along with him today for the game. Terp, pleasure to have you as always.
Always. Pleasure's mine, fellas. Thanks for having me on.
And we'll be right back here on WEEI. I'm going to switch gears a little bit. Our friend Dan Ball has kind of an interesting story, not involving him, but that I'd like to get into on the air. So big thanks to Justin Turpin for joining us. We'll be right back here on Boston Sports Original. We're just going to let that one play, Tom. Be a music station for 5 minutes.
Yeah, we're back at five.
I'm sure a third of my listeners would rather us do that anyway. All right, back here on WEEI. John Lyons alongside Dan Ball. Tom Crisafulli behind the glass.
How about Turp?
That was great.
Yeah.
Always a pleasure to have Turpin. If you missed any of that, we just had Justin Turpin in studio for two segments talking Celtics. We talked a lot, not just their road trip, not just tonight's game, where they're at, why they've been in this malaise for the last 22 games, what they can do to snap out of it. Turp is an A-plus Celtics guy. If you missed any of it, Odyssey app, Apple Podcasts, website, wherever you get your audio content, look it up. He was great. Dan Ball was here with me. And Dan, we spent an hour talking Patriots.
Yeah.
We just spent 45 minutes talking Celtics.
Sure.
I do want to get to this interesting story out of Pittsburgh, the hometown of Kenny Laird.
Oh, yeah.
Kenny Ballgame, as some would say.
Sure.
The hometown of our fearless leader, Ken Laird. You brought to me a very interesting story off air about Paul Skeens, his rookie. Talk to us.
Well, it's about an 11-year-old kid who is in the process of living the dream that I think every sports fan at one time or another as a kid wanted to live, which was finding the one-of-a-kind card. So 11-year-old Pirates fan finds a one-of-a-kind Paul Skeens card. Skeens' autograph and a patch from a game-worn jersey, one-of-a-kind Rookie of the Year card that you simply cannot find from Topps. So the Pirates presented an offer to this 11-year-old kid. We'd like to get this one-of-one card from you, and we're going to put together this insane trade package, your NBA equivalent of unprotected first-round picks, all that kind of stuff, cash considerations, all that. The trade was one-of-one debut patch card for two Pirates season tickets behind home plate for the next 30 years, a meet-and-greet with Paul Skeens, two Paul Skeens signed jerseys. There was a tour of the facilities that was involved. And the last one, a Pirates game with Paul Skeens' girlfriend, Livy Dunn, in the suite with the 11-year-old kid.
See, that would have got Dan Ball sold.
I can't say that it wouldn't.
Yeah.
I can't say that it wouldn't. It wouldn't have pushed me over the edge.
That's what you were reading that list, and I was going to make a joke if you had not mentioned her name. Like, do you get a meet and greet with Livy Dunn?
She was last, but certainly not least. Yeah. And I changed the order on the tweet just to make sure that she went last on that list. But the kid has declined. He's keeping his one of one card, and I turn it back and ask to you, what would you have done in this situation? 11-year-old John Lyon, say it's a one of one Red Sox from when you were growing up in whatever era that was. I don't know your age off the top of my head, and you won't say it on air. So we won't name a player. Insert name of Red.
I would have said no as well, but okay. I would have counteroffered.
Okay.
I would have wanted actual money.
Okay.
I would have taken the tickets, but for my whole life, not just 30. Because 30 years from now, the kid's going to be 41. The Pirates might finally be good then. Like, you know what I mean? They're going to give it up. Like, I would say my whole life,
yeah.
Season tickets. And dare I say, if I was, and I probably would not have thought this forward as an 11-year-old, but if he's listening, for his future children as well.
That's right.
But for my whole life, I would have wanted the autograph stuff, would have wanted actual money. And I don't know, maybe like what, like if I had a favorite player that wasn't Paul Skeens,
yeah.
Some stuff from them.
I like that.
Because it is, I will give the Pirates credit. It's not a terrible offer. We have a texter here on the 401 says the kid
ooh,
lives
that's
in
a good
LA.
Detail.
So, yeah, you can't expect him to. So maybe could be Dodgers tickets.
It's a good detail.
Okay.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
But, yeah, I would have said no. I would have countered. I mean, that is, to the Pirates' credit, that's not a bad offer.
No, it's not.
I would have countered, though. I want a little bit more.
Yeah, I think. Now, there was no information as to whether or not he countered. I think the kid just might have straight up declined and said, no, I'm keeping it. And I wonder if it's. I do honestly wonder if the kid is acting under his own volition or if he's getting told, like, hey, this is how much money you can make from this. Like, you see the stories pop up on
ESPN. If Skeens is a Hall of Famer, that card could be worth, like, millions upon millions of dollars.
And I'm sure you see the headlines on ESPN and everywhere else all the time of, oh, this Babe Ruth bat, this Mickey Mantle ball.
The Honus Wagner card, the
exactly.
Famous card.
Yeah, there are, and the numbers are going up and up and up and up. I've seen Michael Jordan stuff going for millions of dollars. Like, there are some wild prices being paid for memorabilia right now. So it is kind of, it's almost, it's an investment that you're hanging on to this
That's
thing.
Why
it's like
I would
a
want
savings
actual
bond.
Money.
Yeah.
You know, or I would want some agreement where if this card is ever sold, I get 50% of the profit.
Interesting.
You know, so like if Skeens gets the card back in 20 years from now, he sells it himself
right.
For $20 million or $5 million, whatever. I get 50% of that. Like, I would want, of course, 11-year-old me. I don't know if I would have thought that far. Can I give you a great sports card story that's kind of heartbreaking? When I was a little kid.
If you must.
When I was a little kid, I opened up a card of college football cards, and this was in the year 2000.
Okay.
There's a Tom Brady Michigan card in it. I still have the card. You know why it's not worth anything?
Why?
Because about 7 or 8 years ago, my parents' puppy got loose. Took a bite out of the card.
No.
I'm not. I brought it to a card dealer and they were like, we'll give you $75 for it now, broken. Had it been in good condition, thousands of dollars.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
And I know a guy who had a 2003 Tom Brady card from like the team box set and he sold it for like $4,000.
Wow.
And that's just an oath. And of course, they won a Super Bowl that year. I know. But like, I would have had a Tom Brady and it. Before the dog bite, Dan.
Mint condition.
It was I had it in a plastic sheet. It was mint condition. This thing would have been thousands upon thousands of dollars. My parents' puppy chewed it, and now I have to just work a real job, you know, because I don't have that card in my...
Now you have to sit here staring at my mom.
Now I have to be with Dan Ball at 4:54 p.m. on January 25th. Let's actually go to the phones here. John in Melrose says he has some info on this Paul Skeens card. John, what do you got?
Hi, it's no secret info or anything, but I didn't hear you guys talking about it. The family already put that card up. There's like an auction.
Okay.
Oh,
like
okay.
A special auction for a special
Do you know how
card.
Much they're looking for?
I do not, but I have heard in the $2 million range. Wow. But I do not. Like, that was, like, again, I don't have sources.
So, you know, John, let me...
It's hard. It's hard to say no. Yeah. I like the lifetime or the legacy. The legacy season tickets.
The $2 million. So if they're looking for $2 million, that memorabilia and the meet and greet, all that, that probably doesn't add up to $2 million. So I can see why they. So that's what I said. Get a percentage of the profits if they sell it in the future. But good story. So Dan Paul, final verdict. Would you have taken that offer?
Yes, 11-year-old me. If I'm acting on my own volition, yes, I would have.
Okay.
I don't think I would have. I'd like to believe I wouldn't have the foresight. I don't even think I necessarily would have had it.
Yeah. If Paul Skeens was legitimately my favorite player, I would have been like, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting note that he's from Los Angeles, though.
Yeah. So maybe he's a Dodgers fan, and or maybe he's a Padres fan. Who knows? So
right.
He wants one of those. But imagine if you're him and you're like, I'm a big, you know, I want to meet Ohtani because I'm a Dodgers. And Paul Skeens has to work out Ohtani meeting you to get his card back. You know what I mean? Or if I was a Red Sox fan, like, I want to meet David Ortiz and Manny Ramirez. And some guy on the Reds has to, like, work that out so I meet them.
Joey Votto's working the phones. Yeah.
Hey, Poppy, please meet this kid. He's so annoying.
We got a text from the caller saying, I am sorry, I swore.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Yes, allegedly.
Allegedly.
Yes. All right. We've got 1 hour left. We are going to get into the conference championship games that are taking place tomorrow. We're going to reset a little bit Patriots thoughts next on their coordinator. It's been a hot button issue this week. We have some strong thoughts on it. All that and more coming up in the final hour on Boston Sports Original WEEI.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Alma said with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's A-L-M-A-S-E-D.com.